Chapter 22.
"This is outrageous! It must be some sort of a joke at our expense," Mr. Lambert exclaimed, invitation in hand.
Davin looked up from his ledger, finding the older man standing rigid, with a white-knuckled grip on a message recently brought in by one of the Queen's messengers.
"This must have something to do with you, Mr. Harper. This office hardly ever attracted the Queen's notice before you arrived. Whatever will I wear?"
"What is it this time, Mr. Lambert?" Davin asked, trying to keep from smiling.
Mr. Lambert took the unexpected so poorly that he thought it best not to make light of his indisposition.
"We've been invited, Mr. Harper."
"To what exactly?"
Davin hoped it was another outdoor excursion to Harwickshire. There were so many places there he wanted to explore.
"The day of burning ball, and I mean the ball, with all the nobles. We look like a pair of fools. What does Queen Philippa think we're supposed to do?"
Davin joined Mr. Lambert in surprise. The day of burning celebrated the discovery of the eternal flame after the Cretesian council had ordered Joris's house burned. The midsummer celebration packed the streets and taverns, and any noble of note was invited to Belshire for a day of sport, entertainment, and a ball so ornate and expensive that not to go was considered sheer idiocy. Emile had begged him to go every year, and he had only obliged once. It was at that ball he first realized he could never satisfy her expectations of a nobleman.
"Are you sure?" Davin asked, eyebrows scrunched.
As a member of the House of Light, he was expected to attend a more sombre ceremony in the Ember Chapel that consisted of singing, speeches, and mingling with fellow members. The Queen's invitation superseded that of the House of Light, but it was an oddity to have been invited at all.
"Just because I'm a man of numbers doesn't mean I can't read, Mr. Harper. See for yourself. I think I'm going to be sick."
Mr. Lambert tossed the letter on Davin's desk, sat down, and put his head on his arms in what Davin supposed was an attempt to fend off a headache. Davin opened the invitation, and it was indeed specific. They were invited to the festivities by special request of the Queen, which meant they couldn't refuse without incurring her displeasure. He could understand Mr. Lambert's indisposition. Fools, indeed. They would end up serving punch or spending hours alone gawking at the fine lords and ladies, just as puzzled by the attendance of two clerks as they were. Even worse, it was absolutely guaranteed that his recently betrothed wife and the Earl of Tarbor would be in attendance. He had to find a way out. He had planned to spend his day carving. The stack of stray wood piled in his humble domicile in the Crooks was taking the place over. The need to carve had grown, occupying almost every moment of his dwindling free time. He had decided to send his gifts anonymously to avoid attracting attention to himself. By his own count, he had gifted only 6. He had twice that many nearly finished, and nearly 20 sticks, boards, and logs, all piled up in a corner and changing shapes before his eyes the moment he came home. But his plan was coming to naught. Only severe illness or injury could honourably excuse him from what seemed more like a summons than an invitation. Mr. Lambert's nerves would likely throw him into sufficiently poor health to earn a pass. As for himself, Davin figured he would just have to find some other way to get himself shot or beaten. Getting thrown in jail would also do the trick, but he certainly didn't want to sacrifice his comfortable position in the Queen's household. Davin returned the letter to a nearly indisposed Mr. Lambert.
"Take courage," he intoned comfortingly. "We'll both go find a book we've never read, and if we stand still enough, we might be mistaken for statues."
"What a stupid thing to say," Mr. Lambert moaned. "Who has ever chiseled a statue of a clerk?"
The room felt a bit stuffy, so Davin stood and decided to walk about a bit to refresh himself and let Mr. Lambert recover, if he ever did. Davin rarely ventured around the palace now, fearing an encounter with Emile or Lady Hightower. He was sure his wife would pick him out in an instant, and his last encounter with Lady Hightower ended on an odd key. He apparently had frustrated her to the point of tears, and he thought it best to avoid her to not cause her further distress. He found her intruding on his thoughts a little more regularly than was entirely appropriate for an underclerk. Still, he wondered how she fared. What the lady's ledgers contained and what the boot and wheel caravan had been hauling had still not been revealed, at least not to him, and the Lord High Sheriff was keeping the investigation close to his chest. Davin turned the corner to leave the offices and found himself face to face with Queen Philippa, who carried an envelope in one hand and the arrow-asp walking stick in the other. A pair of her personal bodyguards flanked her. He removed his hat and bowed.
"Your Grace, it is an honour to see you," he said. "How may I serve?"
"Thank you, Mr. Harper, and I am happy to see you. I wanted to stop by to thank you for the timely gift of the walking stick. As you may have heard, I turned my ankle not an hour before Lady Hightower brought me this from you. How are your wounds coming along?"
"Quite well. This is the first day I've tried to work my full shift, and I feel fit enough."
"Very well. I have a favour to ask of you," she said, extending the envelope. "Will you deliver this to Lady Hightower for me?"
Davin's forehead creased.
"I think it might be better if someone else delivered it, Your Eminence. I'm not sure the Lady Hightower would appreciate—"
"Do be quiet, Mr. Harper. Lady Hightower has been unwell and unseen for 3 days, and I'm ordering you to do it because you are familiar with her difficulties. Deliver it to her personally. Do not give it to a servant. Inform her its contents are of a sensitive nature and that she should read it alone."
"News of the ledgers, perhaps?"
Davin took the proffered envelope.
"I did not know that she was ill. Is the case serious?"
The Queen shrugged.
"A bit of melancholy over some distressing news, I fear. More than that I cannot say."
Davin opened his mouth to inquire further, but the Queen shushed him and sent him on his way with a swat of her stick. He turned the envelope over in his hands and walked in the direction of Lady Hightower's chambers. Whatever the Queen had written for her, it was short, probably only a single sheet of paper. Curiosity sped him along. The Lady Hightower surely wanted the matter of her estate's finances kept as secret as possible, but he hoped she would feel able to confide in him if something serious had occurred. After straightening his jacket, he knocked softly at the door. Missa answered.
"Thank the flame," she whispered, stepping aside. "Come in, Mr. Harper, please."
The spacious apartment's living area appeared empty save for the two of them, and the whole place was deadly quiet.
"Is Lady Hightower resting?" he asked,
taken aback by the lady's maid's desperate tone.
"The Queen asked me to deliver a message to her ladyship personally."
"No, she is not resting,"
Missa answered, wringing her hands and lowering her voice to a whisper.
"She's been in her room staring out the window for 3 days. Her parents came 3 nights back, and there was an awful argument. They sent Miss Hale home that evening. I've never seen her like this, Mr. Harper. I'm worried."
Davin nodded, wondering what she and her parents could find to argue about. If her family knew of her troubles and of the attack, surely they would rally to her support.
"May I see her, or can you ask her for a convenient time for me to visit?"
"Please go see her," Missa begged. "Please, I took her some wine moments ago. Just knock before you enter."
Nervously, Davin rapped at the door and cracked it.
"Lady Hightower? It is Mr. Harper. May I see you for a moment?"
"If you wish," she said, voice subdued. He entered quietly, leaving the door open for propriety's sake. As Missa had indicated, Ariane sat on a divan near a window, legs pulled up to her chest and hair down. The window revealed an overcast and stormy sky, and the weak light greyed Ariane's beautiful face. A fitful rain pecked lightly on the window, her head leaning against the wall and a glass half full of red wine resting untouched on the sill. She wore a plain white dress and didn't turn to look at him as he neared and placed the letter on the desk next to the jewellery he had carved for her. He pulled the chair out and sat down.
"The Queen asked me to deliver this letter to you and to see how you fared. I was sorry to hear you were unwell, and I am resolved not to make the situation worse by apologizing for anything."
The edges of her lips turned up ever so slightly, and she wiped one of her eyes, gaze remaining upon the storm outside. He continued,
"I know I am not entitled to know of your concerns, Lady Hightower, but if I can help you in any way, I would be pleased to do so."
She hardly moved for many moments, and Davin listened to the pattering of rain on the window pane until she sighed and straightened a little. Her gaze she kept fixed out the window.
"When I was nearly 8, and Elaine was just a baby," she said, "I remember sitting around the dinner table one evening when a servant pouring wine mishandled the bottle and sent my father's glass rolling off onto the floor, spilling wine all over the white tablecloth. I thought it was funny and started to laugh, but my father backhanded the servant, his ring cutting the poor man's cheek almost to the bone.
He swore at him, beat him and threw him out of the room. My two older brothers found this amusing. I was horrified. I had heard my father and mother yell at the servants, but had never before witnessed anything approaching that kind of violence. I came to understand that my parents believe in the proper order of humanity, as they call it, and even as children we were treated little better than the servants until we were married. Well, you know what my mother is like. I found out last night that since I am an unmarried woman, apparently I have regressed in my status.
At last she turned her tear-stung eyes fully toward him, her left cheek marred by a dark bruise. Davin's chair squealed as he rose in shock. Who would dare strike someone so good and lovely? He approached her, inspecting the purple mark on her cheek. Gently he took her face in his hands and probed the cheekbone, her eyes cast down.
I am very sorry, Lady Hightower, he consoled, a steady rage building within him. Does it hurt when you talk or when I press the bone?
No,
she answered quietly.
He stalked out of the room and found Missa. I need you to go to the infirmary and ask Dr. Otis if he has any banded elver leaf. Under no circumstances tell him what it is for, only that a noble lady requires it. Then bring me cold water.
But I should not leave you two alone, she objected.
Propriety be damned, girl, please do as I say, he ordered.
She nodded and left quickly, and he returned to sit with Ariane, who continued her vigil out the window. For the first time since leaving his noble title behind, he wished he could take it up again, find her father, Viscount Hale, and force him onto the field of challenge. While he doubted Ariane would thank him for killing both her husband and her father, the latter certainly deserved it.
What are you up to, Mr. Harper?
She asked, voice colourless. He pushed his violent feelings aside and softened the look on his face. Now was a time for healing.
Fortunately, I happen to know a few remedies for the common bruise. We'll have it cleared up in no time, Lady Hightower. I don't wish to pry, but what inspired such violence?
She turned toward them, eyes flinty.
I found out 3 days ago that I was betrothed to the Earl of Longford, Duke Longford's son.
The hero of Harrickshire?
He asked, realizing now why the two had been alone in the Elderwood that day. She smirked.
We both know he's not the hero of Harrickshire, Mr. Harper. You are. Yes, I know.
Davin opened his mouth, but no words came out. He had thought that she had remained out of view in the wrinkle of the elder tree. It took several moments to compose himself. He wanted to interrogate her more, but realized that there were more pressing matters than credit for Harrickshire.
So, he pressed, you weren't betrothed then. How could your own betrothal be a mystery to you?
She turned back to the window.
He did indeed drop to a knee, but he never finished his proposal before the shooting began. I suppose he figured that I couldn't refuse such an illustrious person, so with a mountain of ego and presumption and a mound of sense, we have Earl Eutychus Longford prepared to announce our nuptials to the world. This marriage is the fondest wish of my parents, and when I informed them that I had not consented to marry him and had no mind to in the near future, this was the result.
Your father's behaviour is unconscionable, Lady Hightower. They may be unhappy with your decision, but to lay a hand on you? I am deeply angered. What will you do?
What can I do? She returned. Despite these events, I don't wish to disappoint my family or cause them any shame. Connection to a duke's family is my parents' deepest ambition. They could have a grandson as a duke one day, have access and influence they can only dream of now. And I'm at the centre of these expectations. How can I refuse?
It suddenly struck him what Lady Hightower reminded him of, Emile after she had married him. In idle moments of pain in his own marriage, he often practiced what he would have said to his wife had he known her true feelings for him before the marriage. That unexpressed advice was what the good Lady Hightower needed now.
Forgive me if I overstep my bounds, he said, but you told me when we were together in Hightower that your previous marriage was arranged and that there was little love. Speaking as a clerk, Lady Hightower, the math is quite simple. If you must be at the expense of two marriages, then at least one of them should profit you. Trust me when I tell you that if you marry the Earl against your feelings, you will spend many days as you are now, staring out the window with lifeless eyes and a heart robbed of joy. For the first few months, you will force yourself to smile at him and be pleasant, but soon the pretending will give way to a loathing of the one you should love, but can't. The red dress you look so fetching in will rot in the closet,
and you will take to wearing anything drab enough not to attract the attention or the touch of the stranger you married for someone else's sake. Your parents you can hide from until their wrath fades. A husband you can't love will find you unprepared for his company every day. As for your father, you remind him that you are the Viscountess of Bittermarch and will not be treated like a dog. And if need be, you tell him that the real hero of Harwickshire can drop a deer from 200 yards in a stiff wind. The door banged open and Missa entered, water and elva leaf in hand. Davin asked for a small dish and mashed the leaf into a watery paste. Removing his handkerchief, he put the wad of paste inside, just as Saunders had done many times for him. After a quick soak in the water, he approached the Lady Hightower, finding her cheeks tear-soaked, but her eyes alive with some new spark. "I know this smells unflattering," he said, "but it will help. Missa, come here, please, and pay attention. I'll need you to do this for the lady when I'm gone." He took the back of Ariane's head and daubed her cheek with the handkerchief, her eyes closing as he worked. "Do this to the bruise for a few minutes every hour for the rest of the day," he instructed. "When done, just leave the handkerchief to soak in the water. You can throw it all out tomorrow. The bruise should fade very quickly over the next couple of days. Now, if you could fetch her some food, something light and a little more wine." "Yes, Mr. Harper," she said, leaving them alone again. Davin completed his ministrations, and without thinking, he kissed Lady Hightower's head as he might when comforting a child. As he returned the handkerchief to its bowl, he noticed the rosebud pendant on the desk and picked it up. "I was wondering if I might paint this for you. It's a new skill I've suddenly acquired." He found her regarding him softly.
"Leave it, Mr. Harper. I like it just as you gave it to me that day in Hightower."
He nodded in understanding.
"Very well," he said. "Eat all the food and get some sleep. I will leave you now, but if I can be of any further use, please send word to the clerk's office. Remember what I said about your dilemma, and don't forget the Queen's letter."
And if anyone hurt her again, they would regret it.
"You have been a great help, Mr. Harper. I feel much better. Won't you stay a while longer?"
"For your reputation's sake, I had best be gone."
He bowed.
"Good day, Lady Hightower." "Good day, Lord Carver,"
she said quietly, after the door had shut.
"And thank you."
Davin Carver.
Had there ever been such a man as he? How had so few minutes with him banished days' worth of despair?
Everything she had to do fell into an orderly line before her as he spoke, the wisdom from his own disastrous marriage breaking her heart and bolstering her courage in equal measure.
"And he kissed me."
While just a modest peck on the head, it was entirely inappropriate and wholeheartedly appreciated. She rose from her divan by the window and stretched, willing life and energy back into her limbs. Her gaze fell upon the desk where the Queen's letter waited. Hoping for news of the investigation, she opened it, finding that the entire missive consisted of two simple words. "You're welcome." For the first time in 3 days, she smiled. She would disobey Davin and forego the sleep. It was time to write some letters of her own. She reaffixed her rosebud pendant and blooming vine bracelet. She needed to keep Davin close in her thoughts, to lend her strength for what she must do.